Hello, and welcome to Everything Remade, a podcast that I hope is about growth as much as it is about music. I'm Edie Quinn, and we have a great show lined up for you today. Before we get started, though, I'd like to remind you we have a Patreon page at patreon.com/humanmachine. If you like what we do on the show, it's a great place to check out our comics, music reviews, and interviews and everything like that in zine format. That's patreon.com/humanmachine. And now, I'd like to play something for you. You're hearing Serpentine by Rotting in Dirt, featuring my new pal, Lark S., on vocals. I'm gonna get out of the way and let the song speak for itself.
When I was like growing up, I didn't really care about music, which is weird. And I guess when I say growing up, I mean more so in the sense of like until I was like 13, which I guess is kind of non-standard. But I had friends all around who were super into, like, they had parents that got them into music and stuff. And I was raised, my parents didn't really include me in their musical leanings, but that was because my mom kind of defaulted to whatever like contemporary Christian music was on the radio. And my dad was kind of, he had his like Rod Stewart and stuff. So I had friends listen to like Nirvana and stuff, and it never really clicked. It was always a background kind of thing. I was always into like nerdy shit. Card games and video games and anime and all that. And so it took getting into Japanese music for me to like care about music as something to participate in. So this is a really long-winded answer to it, otherwise like a straightforward question. The song Cage by the band Deer and Gray, off this album in the 90s, and just kind of the spooky little music boxy kind of piano intro, and it was just this, you know, kind of swirling upbeat, like not quite aggressive, like still pretty radio friendly, but like interesting rock music, quote unquote, as it translated in my mind. And it was just aesthetically interesting, and the genre was all over the place when I got deeper into it. And I was like, oh, I went from like, I think it shocked my parents. Like they couldn't even get me to go to piano lessons growing up. And I was like, I want a guitar. Like you got to get me a guitar. And they're like, well, your little sister has an acoustic guitar. I was like, I don't want that thing. Like, that thing's been in the attic for God knows how long. I don't want that. You got to get me an electric guitar. I want to rock. And I think it kind of expanded just from there. Like I have very vivid memories of just annoying the shit out of my family and friends by my insistence on playing through an amp and my refusal to take lessons. So you know, that's so like, how that goes.
Yeah. All I can think of is like, is like Metalocalypse, like, you know, like I don't want those grandpa's guitars or whatever.
Yes. But, exactly.
But yeah, so what was it about, like, I'm not familiar with the song you're talking about, but you're describing something that sounds kind of like ethereal and sort of like dissonant or whatever. Like it's you know, I could be way off base, but it sounds like you're describing something that's feels a little intangible, right? So what was it about this that you're like, yeah, that makes sense. Like I can.
Yeah. That's a really good question. And I don't exactly know what it was. I think part of it was just because, I don't know, there's that like kid thing of like, I found this and mm-hmm. I got into it and I'm like, this is my thing, like that I'm interested in and I want to like follow that all the way.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, you kind of go for things, I guess, in childhood that feel off the beaten path or something. And that kind of fuels that desire and that like sort of intrigue. But I mean, it's, I could go down like a rabbit hole forever on this, but
did it feel
like
a mystery that you were trying to solve?
Like yes.
Like a puzzle that you're, yeah.
Exactly. Because everything that I had heard up until that point was, it felt familiar and uninteresting to me in some capacity. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really have any notion of like anything that I'm into now, like heavier music, punk shit. Like it was just totally off the beaten path. And like a lot of those bands are like basically like glorified, like glam metal bands, really. Like they're really flashy, like leather and whips kind of PVC shit. So me being like, I think that was probably part of it too, was like, I'm this little suburban kid and I was raised listening to like, I don't know, like Amy Grant and like stuff like that. And this was just so not that, that I just had that desire in my brain. Like, I want to eat this. Like, yeah. I want to exist in whatever this is. And that somehow morphed into wherever I am in life now.
Yeah. But I mean, you never heard Judas Priest before that? Like you're talking about like leather and, sort of like forbidden.
And that's exactly it, is I hadn't. I was like, anything that I was familiar with, like music-wise, again, it was really from like background music while I'm like playing Magic the Gathering on my friend's floor or like, their dad had something on in the car. And then past that, like I associated metal and stuff like that with like, I don't know, a lot of the Satanic Panic stuff that kind of gets like looped in with that back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And was I think it was just,
that you had a, like a instilled like fear of that.
Oh yeah. Big time. That's like my obnoxious soapbox through line from like, I don't know, like 90% of my own like artistic pursuits at this point is like in some variation, like a outlet coping mechanism for all of the shit that kind of gets embroiled in all of that. And that's why I kind of find myself going back to my like weird preteen Japanese glam metal phase. Because I'm like, this was the first part of my life where I was like, I found something that I didn't know about before. And it totally made me, it forced me in a way, because I was so interested in it, to, I don't know, become more comfortable with things that I naturally would have felt some sort of like aversion to, maybe.
Hmm. Yeah, it's... I'm not sure like where your parents fit at age wise as opposed to mine, but it's really weird because like my dad was really like, my dad was always like playing in like hard rock bands, like, and my dad played like Ozzy Osbourne songs on the guitar, like every morning, every like weekend, you know, at every Saturday morning. But like, he would be like Metallica's Devil Worshippers. Like,
two, that's even a little more confusing.
Well, I mean, we're talking about like pre and Justice for All Metallica, you know, I'm old, so I'm not talking about like the Black Album Metallica, but it doesn't really make sense because Metallica is like the one of the, I mean, you know, I mean, they have an album called Kill 'Em All, but come on, it's like not even, it's not even about like killing people.
The Prince of Darkness.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's just weird. And I mean, you know, Motley Crue supposedly, you know, like Shout at the Devil, you play it backwards, you know, I mean, me and my friends did that. Nothing happened.
I love that shit growing up. But all the conspiracies.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just like, I don't know. It's wild. Like, it's wild. The mental gymnastics for some of this, you know, just like the,
oh God. Yeah.
Satanic panic and, you know, everything, like, you burn in comic books, you know, and all of that. It's like, I don't know. It's a wild history. That's like, obviously, it's not just history, even, you know, like shit.
Yeah.
Like there's,
we're facing a lovely little resurgence, if anything.
Right. Right. I mean, like it didn't click with me, like, necessarily about music, even though there's always like the Lil Nas, you know, like, you know, like he's fucking Satan in a video. And like, of course there's that, but like, it really, like, I was like, oh yeah, because like they're trying to get all these comics and stuff banned from these libraries and stuff because they're about like gender nonconforming people and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh yeah, that's a thing that's still happening with
the boogie person of the day.
Yeah, yeah, which is wild. Like nobody that's listening to this, and I surely don't have to tell you either. But like, it's like it just goes to show you, like, it's just like Marvel Comics, DC Comics, like they will have a trans character in a book, they will have queer characters in books. You know what will never happen? None of those books will ever go out of the library. None of those books will ever come under the kind of fire that like a book like Fine or something.
No.
You know, like, I wonder why, you know, like it's like, not because it's a billion-dollar corporation or anything, right? That has nothing to do with it, right? It's like,
I mean, I do think it's like a combination of that, like, and there's that low-hanging fruit complex. Like, when people are going to ban stuff like that, it makes it so much clearer that they're just doing it for, like, the headline. Because nobody wants to read about you banned X-Men Volume 293,
sure,
because Mystique was being gay. I mean, they want to talk about the thing that has the thing in the name. They want to, because that's what sounds pervasive and new. And that's really it, is that all of that shit just gets framed under some false sense of newness. And I'm like, no, it's not new. It's just access, and people just need a boogeyman. They want somebody to direct their vitriol at, and they pick the most vulnerable.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, they're not, like, no one's gonna take Disney to court, you know? Like,
no one's
gonna, like, and it's like, I'm neither like standing or like whatever, like DC or Marvel for having those characters. Like, I think it's cool that they do have those characters that are like that. But like, I don't think they're doing it because it's the right thing. You know what I mean? We're not naive.
Right.
Like, you know? But, there's people that work there, like the writers and stuff. Like, these are like, you know, a lot of the writers that get involved in this kind of stuff, I mean, they're not necessarily living any better than I am right now.
Oh,
you know?
God. See, like,
I
feel like comic artists and writers are like, for how much impact they have on, like, especially right now with, you know, movie stuff being big as it is, you'd think that they would be compensated
and get paid, right?
Accordingly.
But, no, it's like, hey, like, we'll give you this much for doing the issue, and if you created something really cool, we'll put your name on the You know, like, but that's it, just the name. yeah
seriously, it's
cool.
It's
it's wild. I've never had any like, I never wanted to do that, so that's cool. Like, if they were like, we want you to write 8 pages, like, I could, in an anthology, you can do whatever you want, like, I would do that. I'd be like, yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
That, but like, I've never been like, oh, this is my Spider-Man story or whatever. Like, I've no desire to do that whatsoever.
I commend anyone who does.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that, like, I mean, when I was growing up, like, I'm not gonna lie, when I was growing up, you know, like, Spider-Man or what, or X-Men or whatever, like, that was a place of comfort for me. That was a solace.
Same.
In a rough, like, home, childhood home, you know, or whatever. And there's still people that need that and whatever. And so I'm not trying to
Yeah.
poop on all that. It's just like, no. Yeah, it's just never, just like, I never wanted to, you know, I never wanted to, like, make, be in a band that sound like Weezer and be on MTV, you know, that was, it's
same.
Sort of the same, it's, same thing, but
yeah, yeah. I don't know. I definitely understand the, like, Weezer comment, because I was thinking earlier today, because a guy used to be in another band that I was in, I knew, like, years prior, and I always joked around because I laughed. I said, he's the kid that used to bring his acoustic guitar on church trips and play American Idiot over and over again. And I also remember being, like, a, you know, too cool for school, like, 16-year-old, like, emo kid, and being like, oh, I hate this shit. And then, like, I think one of those songs off that album came on the other day, and I was like, it may not exactly be my thing, but it's aged better than I expected it to.
Yeah.
And I kind of appreciate, I'm not, like, a big, like, Green Day, Blink-182 stan or anything, because, again, those are bands I kind of missed the boat on growing up. But I feel like, despite that never being what I really aspired to musically, I listened back to some of that Green Day record in, like, a modern context, and I was like, okay, I kind of see what was getting people going about this now, and I wish that I had given it a second chance back then.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was an interesting choice to be playing that on a church trip, you know? So
yeah.
that's my takeaway, is I'm like, all right, like, a very strange thumbs up from me on the choice to be playing that on the church trip. But, yeah, I don't know. It's a real, Green Day's a real weird one for me, because, like, I really, really enjoyed them before Dookie came out, and that's how old I am, right? So, like, we saw them on a tour when Dookie came out, and, like, this is before there was, like, a video. This was, like, it just came out. Like, they were, like, opening for Bad Religion.
Oh,
and
shit.
We saw them, and afterwards, Billy Joe was out in the crowd, and, like, my friend was like, will you sign this record for me? And it was, like, this real, like, low-key copy of Thousand Hours or whatever. And he was like, no. But then he goes to our other friend that was there, who was, like, 16, and he was like, do you want to make out?
No.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how old he was at the time, but he was, like, not 16, you know, he's, like,
no.
Probably 21 or older, but, like, yeah. And my friend was like, fuck you, dude, you know, or whatever. And then, like, he just, like, laughed and, like, walked away or whatever. But, like, I don't know. Weird band for lots of
the
reasons.
Pop punk legacy lives on.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I don't know, there's the whole stuff with his kid or whatever, but.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, I don't know. I'm sort of like, well, probably the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Yeah, I was about to say, but, something, something apple tree.
Yeah. But like, definitely one of those bands that I think, you know, culturally, them, like The Offspring, obviously Nirvana, you know? I don't know if, like, I wonder sometimes if it wasn't for Nirvana, like, what rock music would sound like now.
Oh, my God.
Because, there was Def Leppard, and then there was Guns N' Roses. And Guns N' Roses is kind of a really strange, like, middle ground between Def Leppard and Nirvana. You know, like, they're more raw, so it's like... And then there's Nirvana, and then there's I don't know. I honestly can't really fuck with the way that music went because of Nirvana, so I don't know if that's like a... Like, Nirvana's probably one of those bands that I was like, oh, that's all they're doing, like, as far as, like, guitar? And I was like, I could do that. Yeah.
Same.
So
that was my other, like, teenage soapbox, being an asshole and being like, I got a guitar and I can play It Smells Like Teen Spirit and it's not that hard.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So it's like, it's weird. They're weird. They're a weird band. Cause, like, I do think they're a great band, and I'm not trying to, like, say anything about that, but, like, what happened like after Soundgarden, after Nirvana, after that, like, where we get, like, you know, basically, everyone trying to, like, outdo that, and we just get, like, Disturbed and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was about to say, we just get every variation.
Five Finger Death Punch, I'm just like, no, like, no.
Serious octane core.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, but, yeah, I sometimes it was like, yeah, what would have happened if that never happened? Like, what would rock music be like? Like,
a world where rock became more flashy instead of less flashy.
Yeah, that would be, I don't know, that's interesting. Like, what do we have to do to, like, yeah, what do we have to do to make that kind of music? Like, what would that sound like? What would more flashy, like, it's almost sort of like you would have to imagine, because of technology and stuff, a sort of Nintendo core-ish, like, you know, but, like, not, but without the, but not sounding fun, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, like, less straightforward.
Fun. Yeah, yeah.
Cyber grind without the grind.
Yeah, yeah. Without the grind, without the, like, less goofy, like, you know, which is, like, the goofy is the good part, right? Like, some of the good part.
You but want it's
like,
the camp.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's, I don't know. Like, we'll...
Mid-tempo contemporary cyber rock.
Yeah. This sounds like something that Wes Meadows could do. Like...
No, somebody... You gotta get somebody on the line. Somebody can be responsible for this.
Yeah. It's not gonna be me. I'm busy. I'm busy. But,
I lack the technical know-how.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, when did you start playing in bands?
Oh, I mean, I guess I did that thing where I got a guitar and I was like, I'm in a band now. Like, me, my friend got a guitar at the same time. So we put together a little website with all our names on it, and we had no songs.
but did you have t-shirt designs, though? Because
I spent hours in Photoshop making cool logos with the nice rendered clouds, and... Nothing came of that, of course, as it never does. But really, like, realistically, that just kind of evolved over the years into, like, oh, now we play with other high school friends. And, you know, we played a show at a party at youth group. with a band that didn't have a name and had two songs. And that was the greatest moment of my, like, 15 years on planet Earth at the time. But yeah, that it's funny because those are like the formative moments I look back on and I'm like, oh, I'm still like, some of these people are still my mainstays. Like, my friend who I literally started playing guitar with, we still play together. Like he played guitar in, the band I was in before Dirt, for like, God, I mean, that lasted for 6 or 7 years, maybe.
Oh, wow.
So
what was that band called?
Barrow.
Okay.
So what, it was like a,
is yeah, there kinda like a gloomy, stuff online that you yeah. refer people to? Like it's, you know, you're still yeah. proud of it and happy with it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those, I say those records are like my babies. Okay. It's kind of gloomy, screamo post-hardcore stuff. First album's a little more upbeat, anthemic, post-rocky. Second album is a lot more miserable. but yeah, it's all under like barrowband.bandcamp.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where most of my time beforehand was.
I don't know if I've heard that or if I'm confusing it with something else.
Like, there was a band that was around that was like an instrumental post-rock band called Barrows with an S. And they, yeah, it was, I think, more like a instrumental, like from like Europe or something, if I remember right.
Okay.
Yeah, we played out for a while back in like 2010 through 2014-ish.
Did you have an LP?
Yeah, yeah, we have two LPs.
Okay, on what? Was it released on a label?
The first one we self-released, and the second one was on Mayfly, who I believe is now defunct.
Yeah, that was... who did that label?
Bob Farley.
Right. Well... I'm trying to remember how I know Bob Farley, but I definitely remember that label. Yeah,
he's a Midwest guy. He only time we ever met him was when we played in like Akron, and he was like right down the road. I think he's from Cleveland or something.
Yeah, I feel like it's a thing where somebody that I know was like. Like helping with a bunch of releases, not necessarily helping, but had a bunch of them. And so I don't even remember if I traded with Bob specifically or if I just got some of the releases.
Yeah. In that time frame, he put out a ton of stuff. I feel like, I'm trying to think of other bands that, I mean, we were close with Apart, who put out a record on that label. And I think City Cop, now Glass Bones, might have put out something with them,
right,
or at least did a lot of work with them. Cause I know I talked to Max about that a little while and he mentioned at least like helping out with Mayfly stuff back right. in the day. Yeah.
While we're talking about location, I don't know where your band is from.
Yeah.
it's not on any of your socials.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I think it used to be there, and now it's all gone. So we're from North Carolina.
Okay.
Everyone that is not me is around, like, Greensboro, Winston-Salem, Triad area, and I'm in Greenville, so, like, eastern North Carolina. So okay. About, like, 3 hours away from each other.
Yeah, I always get North Carolina and South Carolina mixed up, like with the cities,
yeah,
but that's
everybody
where
does.
Clout Funeral's from, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah,
my good friend Darius and yeah. Nick are yeah. so fantastic.
For sure. Okay. I didn't want to, like, every time I always go, Oh, yeah. That one time we played in South Carolina in Greenville, and people were like, that's North Carolina.
Oh, yeah. But no, don't worry. There is also a Greenville, South Carolina.
See, that's the thing,
too. Anytime I put in directions in Google, that's where they want to default me to.
Yeah.
So you're not wrong.
Yeah, that's the thing, too. It's like, that's how they get you, right? It's like, you're wrong, but you're also, there is a Greenville in South Carolina, so that's why you can never, never, never keep it straight. But
they're not making it
any easier. No matter how many packages
easier.
I send to Nick, you know, it's like,
they're never going to get there.
Yeah. But yeah, that's awesome. I do not know why I, for some reason, thought that y'all were from Wisconsin. And then
that would be
you
sick.
Started talking about Ohio so much. And I was like, wait, are they actually from, is this band from Ohio? Like, what's going on? And North Carolina. Perfect.
Yeah. And I lived in Chicago when this band started.
Okay.
So, yeah. And it was kind of like an internet thing at first. But North Carolina is where I grew up. And again, it's all, at least, our guitar player, he records, mixes, masters, and like, I know he's at least recorded and mixed all of the Dirt stuff so far, and mastered at least a few of them. I know he mastered the Split, but he and I have been, God, we've been friends, roommates, co-workers, bandmates, so on and so forth, for however many years now. And yeah, it's kind of come full circle moving back down here and kind of getting to sort of pursue it in a more meaningful way, at least more so than we were able to do at a distance.
Yeah.
When we were kind of just thinking it was a for funsies sort of deal.
Yeah. Is that how the first release came about? Was it just a distance recording like that? And was that like partially because of like lockdowns and stuff that the band formed, or?
So it's odd. Like our timeline is a little funny. So we put out like a one song demo in like 2018 that I recorded with him just like on a whim. Like we were getting a cup of coffee and he said that he had demoed out like a metal song and he just didn't have anyone to do vocals, but it probably wasn't going to go anywhere. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And I hadn't done vocals at that point in like a heavier capacity in like 3 or 4 years, I guess. And so we put that out and it wasn't really much of anything. And then I moved back and we put out another thing beginning of 2020 that we recorded right before lockdown. And that was the annoying part of that is we played like two shows when I moved back in 2019 and then all but just kind of like put something else out the next year and like quit. Like we were just like, well, we had some stuff we wanted to do, but the universe does not think that's interested.
Yeah.
So, we put it kind of away. And then when we put out I'm Eating My Shame in 2022, that was kind of just a product of like, he just kind of kept recording riffs, I guess. And we have a mutual friend who started recording riffs with him. And then we were like, well, do we just want to keep the same stuff that we had, like be the same band, or do you want this to be something else? And we're like, well, for ease, it's not that much to speak of. I mean, it's not, even really there anymore. Like, I don't even know if the original releases are up on anything at this point.
Well, there's one
but,
that I don't know how to refer to. Like, I don't know what
it's
called.
Oh, yeah, the Slashes.
Yeah, the Three Slashes. So how would you, what would you call that one?
I don't know.
Okay.
We've actually discussed that internally, and it has been a hotly debated topic on if that has any pronunciation or if it's three or if it's Slashes or something. I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just kind of, we recorded that and put it out like right when lockdown happened. And then I don't think anybody anticipated lockdown to be what it was.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, so that was where we kind of called it. And then, yeah, everybody we play with now, kind of people that I don't want to say poached, that's a terrible word, but Jacob, our guitarist, he knew from other bands and stuff because he recorded other bands in the area, and he just kind of said, I have riffs, do you want to play your respective instrument? And it just kind of kept going from there. And now we've got a bunch of other stuff in the pipeline that, you know, we're just kind of trying to finish up logistically, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you did mention I'm Eating My Shame. And so that was kind of just like, it wasn't necessarily written like as like we're a band and these are the songs that we're writing. It was just like, hey, I happen to keep writing this stuff. Would you want to throw down on it? And then that release was the momentum that you were just like, let's, let's pick this back up. Let's do this like for real. Cause you're like real proud of this and you know, it was received well, et cetera.
Yeah. And I mean, we played our first show back like the night before we recorded those songs. And I hadn't even met our drummer or bassist at the time. Like I met them at the show. And I'm like, hey, good to meet you. Let's play a set. And it was cool. It went surprisingly well. I barely knew the songs, made my way through it. And then we went in, recorded, well, I guess I recorded the next day. They had already been working on it, but yeah, knocked it out then. And then just kind of had that, I don't know, we're all people that are in very different like life places and like headspaces and stuff on what we can and can't do. Mm-hmm. And I think a few of us have a little bit more of the like, let's go kind of like, you know, get out and do it sort of thing. We're also all like in our 30s and like have like day jobs that are super limiting. So that's always kind of like the rate limiting factor. Otherwise we would be, I think, out and about a lot more than we are.
Yeah. So to clarify though, they had been playing the songs together.
Yes.
And you just, that was the first time that you played them.
That was okay. Just me.
Cause that, yeah, that would be wild if everybody showed up at the gig, like, well, I guess we know the songs.
Oh, God, y'all are savants. Good grief.
Yeah. Cause I mean, that's not that far off from how Como Regalia operates, but like, sometimes
and y'all
we
sound
get
killer,
in.
So good for you for crushing it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, sometimes we get a practice in, sometimes not. Yeah, like we've had 5 shows in the last couple years, and we've practiced 3 times. So, New Friends
shit.
Fest, no practice. Just showed up and played the songs.
That's elite.
Snag release, the split release show with Snag, no practice. Just showed up and played the songs.
Oh my God.
The other ones I don't have an excuse for. If we played bad, we did get a chance to practice. I don't, I have a habit of not watching videos and stuff that are taken of me because I feel dysphoric about it, but I also feel different in a way that's tied, I guess, sort of to my age. You know, I don't know if that makes sense.
Seriously, I understand that. Like, yeah. That's a topic that I feel always. If anything, it kind of scared me away from like trying to push back into music because I think I had sold myself on this idea in my head that I gave it my fair swing. And then I was like, and now I'm, you know, I'm working and I'm, you know, I'm getting a paycheck and I'm miserable.
Yeah.
But that's the trade-off, I guess. And then I think I reached the point coming back where I was like, oh shit, I have people around to play music with now. And it's been like the best thing that I've ever done. And I thought I was going to feel, I guess, like a super fish out of water, because when I finish I mean, I guess when I moved to Chicago and kind of like didn't have anything going on for the first few years I was there, I was like, oh, I'm going to get back into this at some point and I'm going to feel like aged out of it, for lack of better words. Like, I'm going to feel like I'm 10 years older than everybody in the room. And it's, I totally feel you on that. And especially like from the standpoint of being a trans person is like a lot of like trying to edge my way into a lot of different kind of expectations while also, you know, avoiding other ones. I don't know the best way to phrase it.
Yeah. I mean, I talked about this a little bit in my chat with Searshe from Star 99, but there's a aspect of my personality that is like for function only, and like I get into like machine mode, right? Like, and I'm just like, these are the things that need to be done. And like, I, like a lot of trans girls would describe this as like boy mode or whatever, you know, and not necessarily like your headspace, right? But the way you're dressed or the way you're whatever, right?
Right.
And that's like, that's like my, that's my thing. I even record drums and stuff in jeans half the time because like this is just how I get comfortable being prepared to accomplish things or to like, it's like I'm ready to work, you know? Like that's the mentality.
1000%, yes.
And we were talking like just for a second before we started recording where, you know, we were talking about like confidence with drums, you know, and specifically like how, you know, at least I believe that the drums are like, God, they're probably 85% confidence, you know, because if you get back there thinking things are going to fall apart, they will, you know?
Right.
So even if you're terrible at drums, if you go back there and this is why like the drummers in like every band have that, like there's that stereotype of like drummers being like the cool one and like, you know what I mean? And just being like, yeah, it's cool, you know? And I don't know if other drummers, I don't know if that's an act for them or not. I don't know. It could be, you know, but it's like you have to be able to put yourself into these mindsets sometimes. Or like, you know, as not everybody has to go like method actor Jim Carrey, you know, don't call me like, call me Andy, you know, or whatever. Like,
right.
Not everybody has to go all the way there. Like, I don't even go all the way there, but there is a certain, like, I'm like, I am ready to do this. And like, yeah, I get in my head about it sometimes because, you know, the first thing I feel like people want to do like is say something like, yeah, like, and maybe this is just me. Maybe it's because I have like persecution complexes from like, you know, years of being abused as a child. But like, I feel like the first thing people want to do is like, they want you to hyper express femininity as like a trans woman. So the first thing that's going to go through their, yeah, I didn't think so. You know what I'm saying?
Oh my God.
And so
that's so spot on.
So I'm like, you know, I don't need to do this. I don't need to do that. I don't need to whatever for anybody. But like seeing it play back, and I'm telling myself like all this stuff that I have to like fight, like all the internalized stuff that you have to like fight through all the time. So I just don't do it, right?
Yeah, I don't blame you. Everybody has to make boundaries for themselves in one capacity or another. And luckily it's like, I feel like I can understand, like, I don't know, I'm somebody who like overlooks into things. So like if somebody tells me we have something posted online, you know, if there's a photo, video, something, I'm kind of doing the same thing, but like in like the opposite way, where I'm like immediately going and being like, not going to be able to do anything about this, but if I don't like the way that it looks, I at least want to be aware of it.
Sure.
But I don't know. It's like, I think I'm tying my brain around a little bit. It's a confidence thing. And that's that being able to set a personal boundary that you can personally say, I know it exists, but I'm not privy to it, so to speak, is a powerful trait. I mean, that's a willpower thing, and kudos to you for doing that and having that mindfulness about yourself and like knowing the things that make you feel one way or another. That's something that I still find myself figuring out, like, oh, this made me feel not so good. Why?
Yeah, it's a weird thing too, because like I definitely feel very honored that it exists. I feel very, I'm touched that people do this for you, you know? And like, I mean, I'm not watching that cause it's bad in any way, you know? Like I'm honored by it and I'm flattered and everything. It's just like, yeah, there's that thing where I'm like, and I mean, only the 13 other trans people that are listening to this are going to know what we're talking about. Like, we're alienating literally everyone else, which is, you know, it's fine. Like, I will talk to some straight white guys soon. Don't worry. It'll happen. Like, there's still straight white guy bands. Don't worry about it. It's just one of those things. Like, I don't watch it a lot because I'm, I don't know. There's only like, I think that they have that mindset that it's just like, just be yourself.
Oh my God.
And like,
just be yourself. Yeah. You don't have to do anything in any particular way.
Like,
easier said than done.
Right. I mean, that phrase, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, comes to mind.
Yeah.
Because it's like, that sounds wonderful, right? It really does. And there's like the fact that like I, in my town, I see like zero trans people ever. So like, I saw a person with a beard in a dress at the grocery store the other day. And I was like, fuck yeah, right? But like, the thing is, this person was like fucking 6'5 and weighed 250 pounds. Nobody's saying shit to that person. You know what I'm saying? Like,
hell yeah.
Nobody's saying shit to that person. And like, more power to them. But I do not look like that. Like,
same.
So,
I'm built like the thing outside of a car dealership.
Yeah,
the wind would blow me away.
Exactly, exactly. And like, it is known to me that like, I don't just get my ass beat like I was when I was 25 and I feel fine in a couple days. Like, that's not a thing that my body does
anymore. No, it's gonna linger.
So like, yeah, it's like, I don't know. There isn't a world that I live in right now where I can just don't worry about it and be myself, you know?
No,
and,
it's people. I feel like
unfortunate.
Say that. Yeah, it's incredibly unfortunate. Yeah. And I think it's like you said, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And I think people think that that's like a supportive mindset. But it does, it's kind of a thoughts and prayers thing.
Yeah. I'm like, do you want to go with me to the, like, do you want to accompany me everywhere? And then like, and then when I get like yelled at and stuff, because like I don't know what it is with me, but like, I'm the kind of person, like, I've been getting yelled at. I've been getting accosted and yelled at for different things, like, my entire life. I just have a face, I guess, that people are just like, I want to harass that person. Like, whether
that shit,
it's just like, I get yelled at for having a mask on in the Walmart. I get yelled at for just, you know, like, whatever. And it's just like, I can't imagine. Like, I like to have a little bit of deniability with, like,
yeah,
my outfits, right? Where I'm like, what do you, like, what do y'all think? Is like, I'll wear a romper and people are like, what is going on here, you know? But like,
sure,
I probably won't get my ass beat, you know. Probably I could, though. I don't know, you know.
I don't understand. There's never been a part of my mind that looks at another human being, even, you know, even people that I'm like, you could be wearing like a shirt that says, I don't like you specifically, and it's an arrow pointing at me. And I'd be like, I mean, I'm just going to fuck off. Like,
yeah.
So people who go through their lives and they're like, anyone that doesn't look the way that I expect them to look, I'm going to say, fuck you. Like, where did that come from in your brain? Like, what did you accomplish with that? And did you like feel better? Like, going home knowing that you yelled at a stranger, like, was that your thrill of the day?
Yeah.
It's so bizarre to me. I guess it's a power complex thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the only thing that I can think of is people just defer to that same, like, oh, bully the most, you know, the lowest common denominator sort of thing, because it's easy and you already know that you're part of the majority.
Yeah. It's so wild too, like even if there was just magically no such thing as COVID tomorrow, like, I would probably still be wearing a mask everywhere because I have a 13-year-old child who had a liver transplant last year, and so therefore,
oh, wow,
like, he has like no immune system because the medication he takes has to keep his body from rejecting his liver, like, for the rest of his life, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, as cliche as that whole, like, you don't know what somebody else is going through is, like,
it's literally,
it's
the
like,
truth.
Why you're screaming at me. You have no idea. Like, you have no idea why I'm wearing this. Like, you have no idea what,
yeah, like, it's,
I'm trying to protect, you know, like, if,
and even if you did, why the fuck do you care?
Yeah,
I don't understand why people feel that it is their God-given right to comment on everyone and everything in front of them. And everybody just has this whole, I don't know, it's the whole conspiracy theory thing where it's just all these people think that they, for some reason, got it right. And anyone who is not, anyone who they think reflects something that says got it wrong, they want to get on their high horse about.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's, you know, in the couple instances where we're talking about it, I mean, I guess it's like, you can attribute a lot of it to it being like highly politicized stances on things like masks or, you know, the fact that trans people like just need to go to the bathroom or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like it became a thing that, you know, like we're poisoning our society, like by, I don't know, you know, having to piss or by trying to protect, you know, people from airborne viruses or whatever. But
simple normal functions.
just like, yeah, no, like, I mean, it's we live in a truly wild world. There's like a part of me that's always going to be like, people were never meant to have like immediate access to the entire world, like on a whim, 24/7 in the palm of their hands, you know?
And oh, it's God, like, no.
As much as I think like, wow, this is amazing. There's the other side where you're like, wow, this is something else.
The World Wide Web experiment, whatever it is, it has failed in a great many ways.
Yeah.
Somehow it keeps getting worse. Yeah. But it's also so deeply ingrained in the day-to-day now that it's become like a weird, like, functional requirement in some capacity, which is annoying.
Yeah. That's the one sort of like dystopian future that I don't think will ever actually happen, where, like, you know, that's one of them, is where the World Wide Web crashes and everybody is back to X, Y, or Z type existence, you know?
Oh, like, yeah.
That's the one that'll never happen because there's too much commerce, you know, tied up in it, all of
mm-hmm.
it. But already there is, like, there's, with the whole, like, Apple Vision Pro and all that you know,
yeah.
in the metaverse, already there's all those, like, Ready Player One type, like, and, like, I mean, like, I don't know. Scott Snyder just had this comic come out called Clear, where it was like basically people putting on like filters on the entire world so they could just like pretend they're living in like an anime world, or they could pretend they're living in like the 1950s,
yeah.
you know, or they could pretend like whatever. I think we're headed more towards something like that, especially
mm-hmm.
the way people talk about like
their ideal,
what they want out of that. Yeah, yeah, you can mm-hmm. escape, you know. It's like, eh. But anyway, the internet is cool because then you get to make bands
yes.
with people, and you get to do recording projects that turn into bands, you know. So I guess we got that right.
Hell yeah.
But you said that like you have a lot of other sort of projects in the works, and you probably would have started talking about them if you could talk about them, but like is this something that where y'all recorded like a bunch of songs like sort of at the same time as this split, but things are just sort of like coming out as, you know, time permits in sort of some sort of schedule, or is it like there's just more stuff that you all have to get around to recording?
Oh, yeah, no. So, like, a little bit after this split, we were supposed to do another split with a band from here that I don't know is functioning anymore. And it was kind of like it never fully escaped the conceptual phase, but Jacob, our guitar player, and Adam, our other guitar player, are like, I don't know how they do it, but they'll just sit down and they're like, okay, here's a new song we demoed. And I'm like, where the fuck did that come from? So we were trying to go from split to LP. And then Split fell through, and we've got the Holy Ghost Split, which we thought was going to be more of a third, fourth quarter 23 release. And then we almost tried to, like, when we found out that was getting pushed till February, we almost tried to, like, speed run another small release in between. And then turnaround on that ended up being a little bit longer. So now we've got, like, I don't know why we decided to do it this way. I guess just the sessions, but, like, we've got a four song thing that's kind of swirling around and is very close to done if I will finally finish recording vocals. And then we've got just, like, more demos than I can count at this point that we're trying to just sort of, like, whittle down, I think, or, you know, merge in some capacity, or, you know, I don't, there's a ton of stuff that we've just had sitting forever that we started, like, differentiating between, oh, this would make sense to go on this release versus this would make sense to go on a later release, and, you know, that sort of thing. But that's still, I think the little thing should be out hopefully this year. And then the bigger thing will be a estimated time unknown, because I think we told ourselves we're just kind of trying to take our time through it. Yeah. Let everything kind of naturally come together.
Is that something that's new for y'all, or like trying to, like,
from, like, a,
let it hatch on its own?
I think a lot of the stuff that we do usually kind of ends up being that way. They, like, iterate a lot. And since Jacob basically has, like, his whole studio set up, they pretty much demo out everything straight out of the gate, which is great. And we were talking about the other day how effective it has been for us, like, from a completion standpoint, other than when we were playing in bands 10 years ago and we would just, you know, write stuff in the room and then hope we remembered it for next week's practice.
Yeah.
Or we could piece it back together from the, you know, little video that someone took on their phone or something. Mm-hmm. So usually I feel like songs kind of iterate their way to a final capacity, and then they, you know, lock it in and properly record it. But we're a lot more productive than I think the past, like, year and a half would lead one to believe with our, you know, total 8 songs in almost 2 years. I think we've just gotten bad at finalizing, but we're giving it a little bit more gusto now, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, the reason why I asked that is because you said that the other thing that you were doing, you were trying to, like, speed run it. So, like,
yes,
I didn't know.
So that's the,
like,
four songs.
Yeah.
We,
what was that experience like? As far as, but you said you still have stuff to do, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
we,
okay.
It was one of those things where we, like, really got on the ball really fast. Like, they immediately started tracking stuff, like, jumped straight into it. And then we started to kind of realize that we were trying to do this in, like, November, December, which I guess are, like, you know, classically more naturally busy months. And I think we all, after, you know, we started the process and realized how little time everybody had to actually, make it materialize in the, I mean, we wanted to, like, finish it, you know, mix it, master it, and release it in, like, the span of, like, November or December at that point. And then we were just like, okay, let's just, slow our roll and let the other thing breathe, and let this breathe a little bit more, and, you know, hope that it's better for it. And I think it, if anything, it's given me a little bit more time to fine tune on my end, because I kind of, being at a distance, I record most of the vocal stuff just at home now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to hear that when it comes out.
Thanks.
I know that, you know, if it's something that's being pressed, that stuff takes a whole long time, especially anymore.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. But the new split is incredible.
Thank you.
I've been meaning to chat with someone from the Holy Ghost for a while, and I'll probably have to use that split as an excuse to chat with someone from that band.
Hell
as well.
Yeah. I love them so much.
But I know it's on Salvaged Records, which is Jeremy's label,
yes.
Right?
And yes.
Yeah, so people should pick up a copy of that while it's available. Do you have any shows or anything that you want to plug before we sort of wrap up? Or
yeah, so we've got a show in like a week, a week and a half. Yeah,
I think
so. That's the only thing I got going.
I just have missed it. Well, I'm sure y'all were great at that show.
Hey,
that hasn't happened yet, but will have happened by the time this airs.
Keeping my fingers crossed. It's been a little while.
When is that though? Like just in case. Maybe I'm wrong.
It is on the 9th.
The 9th. Yeah, I think this will air. I don't even know what. I think this. I should know, because my birthday is the 10th. I should know what day of the
Happy
week that
almost
is.
Birthday.
But I don't know what day
it is. It is a Saturday.
Okay.
The 9th is a Saturday.
So I think this would actually.
On Sunday.
I think this one will actually air on the 12th. So we will just have missed that show. But I'm sure you all were amazing. Are there shows planned after that? Or is it just like getting back to working on that release?
We have a few things that we have booked. Just local stuff so far, but I don't think the other ones have actually been announced yet.
Right, right.
That's about it.
So
it's,
just
keep
an eye on Instagram, something like that.
Yep. We've got all the socials, all the streaming platforms, and we are trying our best to keep up with all of them.
And that was my conversation with Larkass. Thank you so much, Lark, for taking the time to chat with me. Thanks to all y'all for listening wherever you are as well. Don't forget to go by patreon.com/humanmachine and sign up to check out what else we're doing. Until next time, take care and do good things.